And thank you very much, Ollie Barrett. Welcome to Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. Hope you're well. It's the 16th of October, 2018. Good to be with you.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show. It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Welcome, welcome. Now, former Scotland Yard detective John Wedger joins the program this hour. It's been over 6 months since we caught up with John. Lots to get through with him. We're going to be talking about Muslim grooming gangs, Muslim rape gangs, as some people call them. We'll be talking about the independent inquiry and where John feels that is, how it's doing in its attempts to unearth the scale of pedophilia in this country. And John has uploaded a YouTube channel since we last spoke, and he's been using that to travel the country to interview whistleblowers, survivors, but also former BBC journalists as well. So very interesting stuff. John Wedger returns to the programme this Tuesday. As usual, if there's something you'd like to tell me, you can do so through Twitter. My account is at Richie Allen Show. Couldn't be simpler. At Richie Allen Show is my Twitter account. Right, yeah. Feeling a bit better. I made a live stream earlier on about a single issue. It's on youtube.com. Been struggling with the old laryngitis over the last few days. Got a bit of a bug that came on me over the weekend. I might lose the voice at some stage during the broadcast, but if I do, I'll whisper, and I'm sure you'll understand me anyway. I hope your day's gone well. It's been a dull old autumnal day here in the great city, beavering away. I have been all afternoon putting the show together, and some interesting things, as usual, caught my eye. And I'll share some of those things with you now. Before I go anywhere, thanks to those of you who sent me a link to the story on RT about the pageant in Israel, the beauty pageant, the pageant for women who survived the Holocaust. Yeah, they had a pageant where the contestants were Holocaust survivors. I'm not going to say any more on that today. I'm going to keep my counsel and say no more about it today. All right, let's crack on with the programme then. You won't have escaped today the story about hate crime. And all news bureaus in this country, in this country more or less, have been reporting that there has been a surge in reports of hate crime directed at people in England and Wales because of their religious beliefs. It rose by 40% last year from 5,949 to 8,336. And that's according to the Home Office. Most religious hate crime, 52% of all offences, was aimed at Muslims. The total number of hate incidents reached a record 94,000 from April 2017 to March 2018, a rise of 17% on the previous year. Over three quarters of those reported incidents were classified as race hate, a total of 71,250. How do you define hate crime? Hate crime is defined as an offence which the victim considers to be driven by hostility towards their race, religion, sexual orientation, disability, or transgender identity. It's all about what the victim thinks. It can include verbal abuse, intimidation, threats, harassment, assault, and bullying, as well as damage to property. The religions that police count hate crimes for are Buddhist, Christian, Hindu, Jewish, Muslim, and Sikh. They also have categories of no religion, other, and unknown. Say what you want about the police, dear listener, but they sure are creative. You can now be done for hate crimes against other or unknown religion. Oh, Jesus. Anyway, ageism. Ageism could become a new hate crime under a review of the law by Sajid Javid, the Home Secretary. He revealed the racial abuse even, and threats he had suffered himself. So while talking about religious hatred and racial hatred, Sajid Javid, the Home Secretary, said that he had received racial abuse and threats. I would argue that he never received any racial abuse. He got what most politicians of all colours and creeds and ethnicities get online, a tirade of abuse, because as human beings, well, they've not got much going for them, do they? Politicians. Anyway, Javid has asked the Law Commission to investigate whether ageism and misogyny should be recognised as hate crimes in the same way as offences motivated by hostility based on race, religion, sexual orientation or disability. Yeah, Javid said the move was part of a review to make the legislation more effective. Hate crime goes directly against the long-standing British values of unity, tolerance and mutual respect, and I am committed to stamping this sickening behaviour out, said Javid. He went on to say, our refreshed action plan sets out how we will tackle the root causes of prejudice and racism, support hate crime victims, and ensure offenders face the full force of the law. Go on, Sajid, you moron. But it's not going to stop, dear listener, with religions, ethnicities, disabilities, sexuality, and gender. It's not going to stop there. Have a listen to Sky News reporter Lorna Shaddick. You're not going to believe your ears. Do you want to hear her? Have I queued it up? This is Lorna Shaddick, Sky News reporter. Listen to this.
So the Home Office has announced these figures, but the government's also coming up with a plan to try and deal with this rise in hate crime, which includes not only things like funding for education programmes to try and help with tolerance in schools, but also money for places of worship to improve their security. And people like taxi drivers and door staff at nightclubs are going to be given training as well under this plan and guidance on spotting hate crime and guidance on how to deal with it. But as part of this review as well, there's also going to be potentially an update into the categories of hate crime, because we saw in those statistics that you read out that race, religion, sexual orientation or disability, any crimes motivated by that at the moment are classed as hate crime. But the Law Commission, which is an independent body that looks into laws and whether or not they need updating, is going to consider whether or not to add new categories, things like misogyny and ageism, and even attitudes towards alternative subcultures. So people like goths or punks, any hatred towards those kinds of groups potentially could be included in future.
Hatred towards goths or punks, I tell you.
What kind of fuckery is this?
We're going to introduce new legislation to provide for prosecuting people guilty of hatred against goths or punks. Yeah, that's what she said. And she's not wrong. You won't be able to look at people in future for risk of upsetting them. And it won't be long before you're getting a phone call from your local plod. That's policeman, by the way, for our overseas listeners, who's ringing you up to say that somebody has accused you of looking at them menacingly. And that you're looking at them menacingly is because you hate them. He's staring at me because he hates me. He has reprimanded me at work for something I didn't do or for something I didn't meet a deadline on. That's what he says. But really, it's because he hates me. He told me that I had been late 3 times in the last 2 weeks, and he wanted to issue me with a verbal warning. But really, he's picking on me because he hates me. Because I'm a goth. That's where it's all going. Targeting the aged for crime. Do people target even old people in terms of committing crimes Do they target them because they think they are weaker because they are older? Or do they think that older people are more trusting and more loving and more open? Is that why? Or do they hate them? How do you say that the crime committed against Mrs. Harris up the road, who's 92, was motivated by hate and not by the evil little fucker knowing that Mrs. Harris has a chairlift to take her upstairs to the landing? This is fucking madness. And there's no opposition to it. Where does it all lead this? I'll tell you where it leads. It leads to the complete censorship of every man, woman, child, dog, cat, fucking turtle on planet Earth. Where you cannot open your mouth to speak about anything at any time, lest some fucking new minority group claim that what you are saying is based purely on your hatred for them. This is not a mindless rant. It's not an act. This isn't theatre. I'm fucking melting down here watching this happen, and nobody is stopping it. Lunacy! Lunacy! How can you say that Bill whacked Mary over the fucking head and stole her handbag? And Jerry did the same thing, but he did so because he was motivated by hatred for women. Not that he's an opportunist thief who saw a woman looking through her handbag outside a pub on a Friday. This leads to complete lockdown of opinion and freedom of expression. And again, there's no opposition to it. Sky News invited a woman called Shan Norris onto the programme today. She's a feminist and a journalist, and she attempted to describe hate crime. What's hate crime, Shan?
So when something becomes a hate crime, you know, as I said, we've got racist hate crime, we've got religious-based hate crime, it means that it becomes an aggravated offence. And so what this entails is that it can attract a longer prison sentence than offences that aren't motivated by hate. And one of the reasons that the Home Office and that the government wants to look at things becoming hate crime is because by giving an aggravated offence, it recognises that it's not just the individual that has been impacted by the crime, but the community or the group that that victim comes from. So it looks at whether these kinds of crimes spread hate or fear or isolation or a sense of segregation across a wider community, as opposed to just impacting on that one individual victim.
Yeah, and I'm going to play that little bit for you again, just in case you didn't hear what she said, because it's important. Listen carefully now.
Is that it's not just the individual that has been impacted by the crime.
It's not just the individual that has been impacted by the crime, okay? So a goth, let's just take a goth. I hung around with goths when I was in secondary school. They were into bands like The Cure, and they were into bands or singers like Marilyn Manson. Some of the music I liked, some of the music I didn't like. And they liked to dress similarly to that which Robert Smith dressed, and later they dressed like Marilyn Manson dressed. Nobody gave a shit. Well, most people didn't give a shit the way they dressed. So, let's take Gots then. Let's hear what she said again there. It's really important. Have a listen.
It recognises that it's not just the individual that has been impacted by the crime.
Right, it's not just the individual. So, Marilyn Manson is in town, and some bloke wearing Marilyn's gear gets a bang over the head by some idiot, some dirtbag, on a Friday night outside the venue. The guy who did it, of course, should be locked up if it's proven that he did it, and he should be given a proper sentence, increasing each time he does it. So next time he does it, the sentence gets worse and worse and worse. Nobody should be assaulted because of the way they look or the music they choose to listen to. Right. But under this new wave of madness, it isn't just Billy the Goth who was impacted by what happened to him. Oh no, have a listen.
But the community or the group that that victim comes from.
But the community or the group that the victim comes from. So the assault on Billy is not an assault on Billy. It's an assault on every man and woman who wore black clothes and black makeup all over the world. And that must be taken into account during sentencing.
So it looks at whether these kinds of crimes spread hate or fear or isolation or a sense of segregation across a wider community, as opposed to just impacting on that one individual victim.
Yeah. 17 and nearly 18 minutes past the hour. Going to leave that. No need for me to elaborate any further on that there. Been a mad day. Dame Laura Cox, you might remember, was asked to look at how the House of Commons deals with bullying and sexual harassment. You might remember this. There was a Newsnight report on the BBC about widespread bullying and harassment, sexual harassment, in Westminster at the House of Commons. Anyway, her report has been revealed. Dame Laura, a former High Court judge, found a culture cascading from the top down of deference, subservience, acquiescence and silence in which bullying, harassment and sexual harassment have been able to thrive and have long been tolerated and concealed. She looked at the treatment of the clerks, the apolitical staff who run the Commons and its committees, and she found consistency in the accounts given by staff members about the problems in the House with bullying and harassment. She heard from 200 people about a place allegedly overwhelmed with culture of deference where victims feel guilty for their victimhood. MPs are a major part of the problem, she wrote. Some MPs were alleged to be serial offenders. She wrote, it is not possible to put a precise figure on the number of MPs who are alleged to have behaved in this way. But the accounts indicate that alleged bullying behaviour has been a more widespread problem than one limited to a few individuals. And while some of the allegations relate to the past, others reveal that it continues to be a problem. Bullying everywhere. John Bercow, the Speaker of the House, said there must be an independent and external inquiry. Now, MPs called for him to step down today immediately, as he has been accused of bullying. Before we hear more about that, though, this is what Bercow had to say today.
Having read with care the report by Dame Laura Cox, and having also lived through the MP's expenses scandal, I am persuaded by at least two of her fundamental recommendations. Without seeking to preempt what the House might ultimately decide, I firmly believe that the only possible way to resolve this matter is the establishment of a body which is both entirely independent of and external to Parliament to hear and adjudicate upon all allegations of bullying, harassment and sexual misconduct.
John Bercow today. So MPs were calling for him to step down. He was overseeing an urgent question on the report. And the urgent question was read out by John Mann. Remember John Mann? The man who chased Ken Livingstone around London, calling him anti-Semitic. John is the arch-Zionist of the House, the father Zionist of the House of Commons. So, Conservative MPs who have long been critics of John Bercow spoke in this debate today, including James Doddridge, who previously called for a vote of no confidence in Bercow because of his handling of Brexit. Doddridge, Conservative, said it was a disturbing report of a number of unacceptable behaviours. How can we encourage John Bercow to stop this behaviour when Bercow has been accused of it himself? Now, what Doddridge said absolutely triggered the Labour MP Jess Phillips. Phillips was enraged and embarked on a monumental tirade that would make the most experienced fishwife, well, burst with pride, Jess Phillips.
I have spoken to hundreds of the people involved in this throughout the process. I noticed that the neither right nor honourable, in my opinion, he probably isn't either anyway, member for Rochford, has probably spoken to none of them. And some of us don't actually care who it is, who is the offender. It is the victims that we care about, and we will not use it for political gain, and nothing fills the victims with more dread than when people play with their feelings. So don't do it. Don't do it in here. Don't do it for them. You are speaking only for yourself.
Jess Phillips there, a bit of hysterical fish whiffery. 23 minutes past the hour. Going to leave that there. There's more I want to get into, but I want to have more time with John Wedger on the programme today. Going to struggle with the old voice today. You're going to have to forgive me. Been battling a bit of a bug, head cold and chest and throat, the whole lot of it for the last few days, which is why I wasn't here yesterday. Don't feel so bad. It's just the throat is very sore and it might just dry up on me. I'll do my best anyway, as you'd expect. Let's have a very quick break. When we come back, John Wedger will join me, former Scotland Yard detective. And that could be John ringing me. Bloody notifications. Good stuff. He's there. Very quick break. Back in a minute with more. My head's all over the place today, so it is. Okay. Right, where are we? Quick break. Back in a minute.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Welcome back to the program. Exactly 25 minutes past the hour. Let's get our guest on then this hour. I will be obviously putting questions to him and comments, so tweet at Richie Allen Show now. It's at Richie Allen Show here on Twitter. And I'll put those questions, I'll put as many of them as I possibly can to John during the conversation. Now, he doesn't need much introduction to many of our listeners. He's a retired police detective with a quarter of a century of experience, over 25 years service, investigating child abuse officially for the police. And as he told us when he was on the programme in the past, he was threatened and bullied because of his exposure of the high-level cover-up of child prostitution. We believe, of course, it's not only been covered up at the highest levels of policing, but also the highest levels of government in this country. There's no doubt about it. Now, working with other whistleblowing police officers, as well as victims and survivors of abuse, he campaigns for a change in the law to give whistleblowers the protection they truly deserve. And again, we've talked a lot about that on the programme over the years, not just here in the UK, but in Ireland as well, in the United States, how whistleblowers are often pursued and harassed and degraded and demeaned and lose their jobs for having the courage to blow the whistle on corruption, whatever it might be, whether it be in finance or whether it be in public office. Let's welcome back to the programme John Wedger. John, welcome back. How are you?
All right, thank you, Richie.
Thanks for coming back on, John. I really appreciate it. I was thinking of you last week. There was a number of issues I wanted to talk about. And before we get into those issues, since we last spoke, you and I see that you've launched a YouTube channel. And I have to say, I've been very impressed looking through the videos on there today. You've been going around the country, John, and you've been speaking not only with victims of child abuse, but also journalists who've tried to get the word out about what's been happening, and again, former police officers. Tell us about the YouTube channel.
I mean, luckily, I was approached by a former BBC presenter who now sort of teaches people how to use mobile phone devices as sort of recording and transmitting tools. And it's a way of really sort of bypassing the mainstream media, who seem to be very reluctant to put any of this stuff out. And it's using, what she does is she teaches people to use social media. And it's incredible the hits that I was getting. And the first broadcast I did, this sort of video now has attained nearly 700,000 views, which it was competing with even Channel 4 News. So with that in mind, I then decided that I didn't really need to use the mainstream media or anything like that. We weren't bothered about using me anyway. But I'd go out there and try and get the word out and expose what's going on. And it's not only have I just spoke to victims and survivors of abuse, but also people that have tried to help expose it. I've got a guy, hopefully this week, I'm going to be speaking to, who is one of the NHS's top child psychiatrists, who wants to talk about how much mental health is attributed to child abuse, yet covered up. I spoke with a former member of the Cray Twins firm, a bloke called Chris Lambriano, who now helps victims and survivors that have fallen foul to alcoholism and drug addiction, and how the system just isn't helping them. So it's broken off into so many different avenues, and it's got quite manic. I mean, there was a bit of a sort of trolling campaign that sort of came out of nowhere, but that now has died down and gone away, and I just dealt with that with the contempt it deserved. But
let's get rid of that. Let's deal with that for 30 seconds. Where do you think that comes from, and why? Why is it, do you think, that when I've been a journalist for over 20 years, and I've learned the hard way how to spot somebody who's a bit of a chancer, or who's trying to, you know, immerse themselves into an arena that they don't know anything about. I can smell a chancer a mile away. I've been nothing but impressed over the years with your candour and your honesty and your single-mindedness and your determination to put information in the public domain. And yet some people, and they're not all bad either, they're not all bad, confused maybe, but certainly not bad, not all of them, they seem to be that paranoid that when somebody comes from your background, John, and you're not the only person to have experienced this, because you worked for Scotland Yard, or maybe because somebody who's speaking about child abuse, maybe they used to work in politics, people have this suspicion that they must be some sort of double agent. Why do people think like that, and how do you deal with it?
I mean, one of the bits of advice I was given was just don't engage.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some people that want an explanation, and I'll happily give that, but I can't be drained, and I will not negotiate with what I deem as spite and evil. So I just get dragged down the hole like they are. But it was a concerted attempt to try and discredit me and the work I've done. And it was so damaging because, that you know, I was doing so much work within secure institutions with very, very damaged people, which actually wanted to not believe me, because a lot of them had grown up with this ingrained hatred of the police,
but
were drawn, without sounding conceited, like me, and knew that I was doing good. And then what this campaign did, it fed their nagging doubt. And luckily, it has gone away. But also, you do get this paranoia. I mean, I addressed the Democratic Veterans Party recently at their annual conference, and I said, how many people does MI5 employ? It must employ more people than Tesco's, because instantly you get branded as MI5 agent.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been accused of trafficking children, stealing money, giving money to another campaigner who's living in Spain. I mean, it's quite laughable. And someone said to me, you're just being attacked by wannabes and has-beens. And they were doing their best, but when you looked at the evidence they were putting against me, it was just nonsensical.
Can I ask you John? Can I ask you this? Do you think in some quarters of the alternative media, now we're not going to mention anybody particularly, but do you think in some quarters. Some independent content creators want to try and take ownership of certain issues and create a kind of an illusion that their voice is the authoritative voice on that particular subject. And you get jealousy then and hostility towards other campaigners because, well, that's my issue. I'm the voice. I know more about that than anybody. I tend to see quite a lot of that. Or am I just trivialising it? What do you think?
No, definitely jealousy. And the other thing is you get this, this like disruption and division that it brings. And so instead of everyone working together, and what was so good when this started was that, I can't take, the full credit for it, but I was bringing together people that would never ordinarily have got together. And the majority of people I started working with were people that had been in prison, were from the criminal classes, because they're the ones that had been in the system and then had turned to, alcohol and self-medication, whatnot, and then ended up in a world of criminality. But they realised I was there to help, and I realised that they were there to help me as well. So we were all being brought together, and then MPs were coming forward, and it was really good, and even people from the church was coming forward. And then, again, and I believe, like you've just said, you just alluded to, jealousy comes into it because they want to be the sole voice for it. And instead of working together, you get this age-old thing of divide and conquer, and it does work. And you've only got to feed something stupid into the mix. You know, instead of people seeing the whole picture of what you've done, the good work that you've done, like it says, by their fruit shall you know them, someone puts some nonsense in, and then claims to have hard evidence, which they've got nothing, and then people just jump on board. And I was getting some wretched comments coming through, real vile stuff. I hope you get cancer. And it is disheartening, but, it has gone away, and it was just born out of pure spite. And I would say, like you've just said, jealousy. But I'm not alone. I've been doing a lot of work and raising quite a lot of money for a kids charity in Rotherham. And I just presented them with quite a big check. And the lady, she was on your show, Jane Senior, the whistleblower for the big scandal in Rotherham. And she said that she's been accused of trafficking children, of stealing millions of pounds of money. Oh, wow. And she said exactly the same, John. I just got accused of absolutely everything. As soon as you do some good, this attack comes on. And one of the things that I don't want to spend too much time going on about, we can't dismiss it. There is this element of satanic ritual abuse which comes in, and whenever anyone mentions it, this is when you get real vile backlash as well.
It's interesting that, John. Yeah, because many years ago when I was doing radio in Spain, I was interviewing David Icke, and he was talking about SRA, and he was giving me links to testimonies from people in different parts of the world. And he wasn't at all dogmatic about it at all. David, at the time, he still isn't, to my knowledge, dogmatic about it. But he said, look, these are people that are saying this, and this is the evidence that's out there. And he did say to me at the time that there was a section of psychiatry and a section of psychology that was trying to dismiss the claims of satanic abuse as memories that were implanted by rogue hypnotherapist and all of that. And David was very candid about that. And he said, well, look, I've looked at it about 500 different ways, he said, and I don't believe, having seen all the evidence, that these are implanted memories. I think the memories are genuine. And then, of course, later on, I met people like Sandra Fecht, whom I came across 3 or 4 years ago, put her on the radio. I absolutely think that it is real and it is happening. Do you think that those who criticise satanic ritual abuse, are some of them coming from a good place? It's because they just can't believe it. Or do you think all of the criticism of the victims is coming from a far more evil place? Where's it coming from?
I mean, you've got to be balanced about it. There are people out there that find this topic incredibly uncomfortable because it's a spiritual element. And now, if you take policing, for example, there have been dozens of stated statute cases that have resulted in successful prosecutions involving satanic ritual abuse in very recent years. And this is throughout the UK. And so prevalent was it that, when I was training as a child abuse detective, part of the training manual goes on about the different types of abuse of children. And one of them was satanic ritual abuse. And they actually cited the case in the Orkney Islands as a genuine case. So it is genuine. And but there are others that will go out their way. And of course, you've just mentioned about planted memories. They call it false memory syndrome. And again, this sort of came out of nowhere. And I mean, I was talking about it the other day. We're seeing this a lot now, how the law has been used to demonize victims. And we see it now with the Criminal Justice Act of 2003, when they brought in a part of it called the Bad Character Act, in which someone that has got convictions for, say, dishonesty, which is shoplifting or robbery, can be classed as a liar even before they're given evidence in a court. Now, a lot of people that are coming forward now and giving their testimonies of abuse in children's homes have committed crimes of dishonesty, shoplifting and everything else. And they've done that to feed drug habits or whatever, but also to survive. So instantly they are demonized. And this is very similar to what you have with the false memory syndrome, when they're straight away demonizing people and making a joke of it. But
I didn't know that, John. You've educated me there. I didn't know that the testimony of certain people can be prevented from reaching a court or a jury based on the fact that they might have committed petty crimes in the past. And as you rightly said there, and I know this from meeting victims of child abuse, I've been meeting child abuse victims going back to the late 1990s in Ireland, as a radio producer in Ireland, meeting victims of the clergy there, and many young men and women trying to come to terms with the horrors of the things that happened to them, and not having the care and the counselling and not having those resources, often did act out and, you know, did do stupid things by way of committing petty crimes, but also fell into drugs. And the idea that they wouldn't be considered further down the line as reliable people because of bad character is sickening. I didn't realise that was going on. Wow.
But as soon as you get branded with the word dishonest, that's going to stick in a jury's mind. Now, when it was brought in, it was seen as quite a sort of major step forward in decency, because there was burglars that had 60, 70 previous convictions. And when their previous convictions were read out at the end of a court and weren't allowed to be alluded to during the trial, the jury was shocked and thought, if only we knew, you know, this is unfair. This is against, you know, common decency and justice. And so it was brought in and it was welcomed. But I believe there was a sinister undertone towards it. And that was, they knew these disclosures were coming out. They knew that something was going to happen. And what we're seeing now are victims coming forward that have evidence which goes to the heart of the establishment.
Why did they know, John? They knew because of the genesis of the internet. They knew that once people had access to, because the internet, whatever else we can say about it, and there are a lot of wrong, there are a lot of problems with the internet, it's basically made the world the size of a laptop. That's how small the world is now, you know. Go ahead.
Well, Richie, if look at what happened after the Napoleonic campaigns. Soldiers were coming back so heavily traumatized and so disgusted at how they were treated and the atrocities they had to encounter. They were refusing to work. And like most people that have got trauma, back in the day, they were turning to the only self-medication, that was alcohol. And they were refusing to work. The army just abandoned them. And they were just lounging about sleeping on the street. So they brought in the Vagrancy Act. And the Vagrancy Act was so that they weren't a national disgrace and they were pushed out the way. So it made it illegal for them to slouch around on the street. We had the same thing after the First World War, when soldiers were coming back in exactly the same situation and were drinking themselves. So they brought in the Licensing Act to get them back to work, to shut them up. And you had the big council house building campaigns post-war, because they were on the verge of a coup d'etat, because a lot of the soldiers from the Second World War were again refusing to cooperate. They were being very vocal about what's happening. So they housed them and they built the working men's clubs and things like that just to placate them and silence them. So I think it's a way of silencing people. Back then, there was a bit of benevolence, so they gave them something to keep them quiet, and you've got this natural thing of reciprocity. You treat me nice, I've got a bit of loyalty to you. But now the government are doing nothing. They're just beating people down, beating them down and down and down. And we are seeing suicides from returning soldiers. How many victims of abuse are killing themselves, either directly or indirectly?
And you spoke to the Veterans Party. And I know I've interviewed Trevor on this program a year or so ago, and I'm going to invite him back on again. And that's another area. And I absolutely believe it's linked into what we're talking about. There are questions flying in for you on Twitter, and they're very interesting questions about the IICSA, so we'll get into those in a minute.
Yeah, I like to talk about that, actually.
Brilliant. John Wedger's our guest, folks. John spent 25 years on the force as a detective investigating child abuse, and he's campaigning these days, is John, for victims to be heard, but also for whistleblowers who have, thrown light onto this, to be protected under the law and not to be persecuted as whistleblowers have. John's got a brand new YouTube channel. It's fairly new. I'll put a link up to that on Twitter in a minute. We're getting through quite a bit here. It's 16 minutes to the top of the hour. Let me get some of these questions to John. Sean McDonald asks, does John think that the IICSA, by the way, that's the Independent Inquiry into Child Sexual Abuse, does John think that these cases are being buried beneath the perpetrator's use of the racism card by design? So John is specifically talking there about gangs of young Pakistani men that have been called Muslim grooming gangs, and some people call them Muslim rape gangs. He wants to ask you, do you think those cases are still being buried because of the racism card being used?
I mean, there's definitely an agenda with the government that they seem very reluctant to sort of expose a lot of what's going on. But, I mean, let's look at grooming per se. I mean, we are hearing more and more about the Pakistani Muslim grooming gangs. Now, whilst working in vice investigations involving children in London, yes, I did come across it. I dealt with one case in the East End of London involving Bangladeshi lads that were preying on girls that were in a children's home in the Bethnal Green area. However, when it comes to the whole scope of grooming and child prostitution, it was still pretty minor. And I think we've got to be careful not to be sidetracked. And I'm in no way sort of trying to belittle what's gone on, mainly in the sort of the northeast cluster of the UK with these gangs. Yes, it's going on. Yes, it is a problem. Yes, there has been a huge reluctance of the police, and I would have thought there has been a fear to intervene out of this notion that they're going to be classed as racist. However, when we look at the history, if there is a history of grooming and child prostitution, you know, in recent history, post-war, you had a lot of it was run by the Maltese gangs. So Malta is only a very small island, you know, in the southern Mediterranean. And a lot of the Maltese migrants came over, and the gangs that were doing the pimping were Maltese. That then made way for the gangs that were coming from the Caribbean islands, which then made way for the sort of European migrants. I mean, and more recently, in early 2000s, there was a lot of it was run by the Albanians, the Kosovans, then the Lithuanians started having a go. And then it made way for the Southern Europeans have done it. So it is constantly changing with the sort of the ethnic background of London.
This is really interesting, John. Jean-Anne Crowley, my friend, she's an actress, spent years in London, and says there were Maltese gangs when she was in London, lots of them based in Soho. So all these gangs, Maltese gangs that gave away to Caribbean gangs, that gave away to Eastern European gangs, they were running underage girls, and God loved the girls, God loved the children. They were basically putting them on the streets, or they were putting them in places where men could come and abuse them. So traditionally, Maltese, Caribbean, Eastern European. That's what.
But the other thing, Richie, what we've got to look at, when you look at who's actually pimping, if we look at the majority, if you used to do like a pie chart or whatever, Let's not disregard the role parents have in this. The amount of mothers that were pimping out their daughters is phenomenal. yet we don't have a hate campaign against mothers. I mean, my mother never did it, and I don't know any mother that does, but there were so many mothers were pimping out for whatever reason, maybe for drugs or for perversion or for whatever it might be, for cash. They were doing it. And also then we got to look at the care institutions. You know, they had governance for these kids, and they were being pimped out. We look at the church. Kids were passed around in there. And then also, if we go back to what we was mentioning about the satanic ritual abuse within Satanism, these kids are passed about from group to group to group. And I'm hearing quite a few accounts of that. So if we are going to talk about grooming gangs, then let's talk about it in its entirety. And I think it's wholly inaccurate just to pick on, say, on the Pakistani gangs. Yeah.
Right, let me jump in. Let me pretend to be a far right-minded person then, just for the sake of a little bit of fair play, as they're not here to put these points to you. Now, everybody who's listening to this will know that I'm sympathetic to what John is saying, right? It's not because I'm kissing John's arse. I'm sympathetic. I have a lot of time for what he's saying because I've looked in areas that he's got me to look in, not just him but others, and looked at documentation, looked at evidence, and what he's saying adds up, right, in terms of the historicity, the history of those who would pimp out young girls and children, underage girls. Really interesting you talked about the parents there, right? In the absence of the alternative, right, they say that they know for a fact and that the statistics bear out that unfettered migration or immigration has resulted in this country in gangs of men, Asian men, mostly Pakistani men, young men, with a very conservative outlook and a very conservative interpretation of Islam. They see white girls as worthless, as fair game, and that's growing in terms of its scope and its scale as a problem. And the alt-right will say that this is being deliberately ignored by everybody, by the lefties, by the liberals, by the media, by the police, and it's growing and growing and growing. One of these guys, and he's not here, and I don't think he ever will be here, Tommy Robinson, whom I interviewed a couple of times when I was on the radio in Spain, the last of which he hung up and walked off the programme, but he says, and I quote, and not a UK television show, an American television show. He said, there are Muslim rape squads in every city in this country. Muslim rape squads. Are there? Is he right?
Well, I mean, like I said, I've never come across a rape squad, and I don't know how he sort of wants to define that. But our children are being preyed on from every single element of society. And I get a lot of people say to me, it's, you know, behind all of this, it's the Masons. And I think, oh, my God. Yeah. No, it isn't. I mean, what we're looking at, the ultimate secret society in this country is the paedophile. Now, it doesn't matter what they hide behind, whether they go behind the guise of Islam or the Christian church or non-denominational, whatever it is. When they're pimping out children, it's organised criminality. And it may be that if you take Rod's room, that there is this area that has got a big Pakistani Muslim population. So therefore, you're going to get criminality that involves them. But then you go to other places, you're not. But it doesn't mean, look at the Orkney Islands. You know, they were pimping out children and rape squads of children there. But there's probably not many Muslims up there back in them days. So it doesn't tie. Now, whether or not there is a reluctance of the government to turn a blind eye, and I worked in the police for decades, and I saw this perverse sort of equality sort of agenda they were pushing on us, and you know so within the British government there is this bizarre way of thinking which doesn't make any common sense whatsoever. So there may be some truth in what you're saying, but they're not the sole ones. That's what my argument is. They are not the sole ones. And I think if you stick on that argument, you're going to be totally distracted, and these other people are going to prey on it.
I agree with that. Can I just ask you one final question on that? It's my contention, and feel free to disagree with me if I'm wrong, but that no hero of the alt-right or the far-right ever exposed the Pakistani grooming gangs. That what they've done is they've tried to exploit it for their own ends. That the exposing of those gangs in Rotherham and elsewhere was done by social workers, was done by ordinary folks, was done like people that you mentioned earlier on, Jane Senior and Maggie Oliver. That's my contention, that no far right mouthpiece has ever really exposed anything. Am I right in saying that?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure, Richie. I couldn't comment on that. I mean, you're getting these people now are setting up like these decoys, and they're sort of getting the online grooming and exposing them. I mean, I don't know if they've got any political bias at all, but not that I'm aware of. I mean, I do follow the news when it comes to the grooming gangs, because I'm interested in the government sort of where it's putting its resources and where it isn't putting its resources. But I mean, this has been going on for decades and decades and decades. I mean, when you look back on history, one of the red light areas of London was an area called Pimlico, and its nickname was Pimplico because of the prevalence of young male prostitutes, and that they were put on the streets around there to service the members of parliament from Millbank. And of course, you're getting these testimonies come out now about Dolphin Square, which is in Pimlico. If you take Holborn in London, there was a red light area, and young boys and young girls were put there around Grape Street, sort of New Oxford Street area. They were on the streets there to service the actors that were all in Drury Lane. So, you know, wherever there is a need for these kids, that's where they're going to be. And you're going to find them all over the place. And unfortunately, there is a need for these kids, because we are awash with paedophiles in this country. So that, look at what's been going on with the ICSA inquiry, the IICSA, and how it keeps folding and folding and folding. I was approached by their solicitors, and they said, you know, quite a few of the victims and survivors have mentioned you. Would you be interested in being what's known as a core participant? And that is someone that's allowed to give evidence from a professional standpoint. And I said, of course. So I submitted my statement, which they cast as credible, corroborative, and I don't know, there's another one. Anyway, it went off, and they were very happy with it. It went off to the government panel, and the day after my statement was served, they amended the parameters so that no low-ranked officer would be allowed to give evidence. So it has been covered up generationally in this country.
How does that make you feel, John? 25 years of impeccable service, trying to do what's right by children. And I'm not going to get all hysterical here and all virtue signalling, but children, you know. I mean, they're the weakest, they're the most vulnerable amongst us, you know. And you give a statement and you pour it all out there. This is what's been going on. This was my experience. And somebody says, well, we've narrowed the parameters now of what can be included. How do you feel when you hear that?
Well, I mean, I got a call the other week from Mike Veal, who's the Chief Constable of Cleveland Police, and he was just saying that they're out to attack me again, the mainstream media, and they tried to sort of rubbish him in saying that he'd lied about breaking a work mobile phone. And that's the best they could do, to class him as a dishonest man. And this was a Daily Mail, said, how can we trust this man if he lies about a phone?
John, we better remind our listeners, because this is very important stuff, and I've had some tweets on Mike Veal. Mike Veal was the top man, as far as I can remember, John will correct me if I'm wrong, at Wiltshire Police. And he headed up Operation Conifer, I believe, which was looking into allegations that were made against former British Prime Minister Edward Heath. And it was an exhaustive investigation. They left no stone unturned. And despite the fact that while Mike Veal was doing that investigation, he was being harassed by the media. Right at every step of the way, he was called names, and it was suggested that it was a witch hunt. While the investigation was going on, these people were trying to pervert the course of justice. Mike kept his head down, and in the end, he produced a report, a very credible report, that said that basically the claims by victims against former Prime Minister Edward Heath were credible, and that if Heath was alive today, he would have questions to answer. Am I right in saying that? That's who Mike Veal is, right?
Yeah, and there was also connections with Ted Heath and his involvement with satanic ritual abuse.
Yeah.
you know, and they're just doing their best. Like I said about the Bad Character Act. I mean, it's not just, and I put out a Facebook campaign, Back Mike Veal. Within a day, there were 77,000 people backing it. You know, and again, the mainstream media are reluctant to do the right thing here. Now, I don't think it's individual journalists, because I've sat down with journalists from the Sunday Times, from the Mail on Sunday, from the Sunday Express, from the Sun, from the Star, you know, and they've told me that they know what's going on. But they said it's an editorial matter. So when it goes through the filter of the editor, it doesn't go anywhere. They can't get the story out. And one of them, he told me about one of the MPs, one of the head MPs, and just said, we knew what he was doing. We young boys, we knew, but we couldn't get it out there. And I'm getting it now with this great girl who's been helping me, the ex-BBC journalist. And she was saying about the cover-ups in Jersey. And even the anthropologist that found the bones in Haute de la Garenne, and the fact that it came back as coconut, and it was preposterous. There was no way it was coconut. It was a juvenile's skull. And yet what they did was, the process is they have to attack the source of the information. So they then started to attack the dog handler. They started to attack the senior officer, Lenny Harper. Lenny Harper is probably one of the most... honourable policeman I've ever met in my life, and brave. And they did their best to absolutely rubbish this man, because they knew if it ever got out what was happening in Haute de la Garenne, it could cause, in my opinion, the political stability of this country to shake.
John, do you want to give a kind of a brief synopsis of Haute de la Garenne? I'm just mindful of the fact,
yeah.
By the way, we were only going to do... up till about now. If you want to stick around for another few minutes, I'm delighted for you to stick around. I can move things around, John. And my voice is deteriorating anyway. If you can stick around, it's all the better for me, because it's you people want to hear, not me.
Yeah,
and this is important.
Well, I mean, if Haute de la Garenne was a children's home on the islands of Jersey, and children that were there were making testimonies that they were being raped and tortured in a basement area, and there was also reference to child murder. The corroboration was that the cadaver dog picked up, you know, a dead body scent. There was anthropologists, there was archaeologists that found human bone in the areas. There were shackles that were found. Blood-stained bath was found, and the bone was even tested for collagen. Now, it's only human beings' bones that's got collagen on. And it all got sent off, and it came back that it was, if there was bone, then it was ancient. It could be hundreds of years old, and that the bone was coconut shell. I mean, it's absolutely laughable. But your question you asked beforehand was, how do I feel about this? Now, I want to put this out to your listeners. Now, I know you've got a massive coverage, Richie. How do they feel about it? When we take 75% of our prison population have come from abusive childhood backgrounds, right? Nearly 90% of mental health referrals come from child traumatic backgrounds. You've got near enough the same percentage of class A drug addicts, heroin addicts, come from childhood abuse backgrounds. It is the detriment and the rot in our society. This is what is causing this country to be in the state it's in, right? Yet nothing is being done about it. Anyone who speaks up, whether they be a police officer, a GP, a social worker, they are absolutely smashed.
How do we break through that, John? Right, because Mail, you know the Independent, you know the Telegraph, you know the BBC are not going to run. I mean, when Mike Veal produced Operation Conifer, the report, that in an ideal world, in a fair world, would have set the journalists from all the newspapers in the country running all over the place to find out more and to really get to the bottom of it. But of course they don't. So what can we do in the meantime? What can people do?
Well, the same way, sort of what I've done, the way I've been recently trained in using my mobile phone and using Facebook is a phenomenal platform. So is Twitter. And my Twitter account, if anyone wants to go into it, I think it's at Wedger, WEDGER underscore John, JON. Facebook, you can put a video out there. And okay, there's some stuff goes out that can be a bit manic and very inaccurate. But I'm going around and I'm talking to victims and survivors which have no need to lie. I'm talking to professionals that have witnessed cover-ups themselves. And for the time being, we've got a massively unregulated platform and it needs to be used.
For the time being, that's really important, because regulation for independent shows like this is coming down the line, and it is coming next year, and that's very important. Look, there are loads of questions coming in. I don't want to be interrupting. I genuinely don't want to be interrupting you. But if I don't get to the questions, it'll be bad form on my behalf. I suggest we go till about 6:30, John. That'll be good. Okay. My voice will go then anyway. It'll be time for me to stop anyway, because the voice is barely hanging on in there. I've had questions on Dunblane. People believe to this day that the massacre at Dunblane School was down to the attempts to cover up child sexual abuse in that area. Do you know much about that? Is that something that you'd be inclined to comment on?
Well, I mean, the only thing is what I've heard from normal sources, you know, the internet, everything else. But what I will say, which I heard from a very credible source, now it's a bit of a side issue, but it shows how these things are unreported. I had a good source of information that was serving a prison sentence in the Scottish prison system. And he got to know Abdul El Megrahi whilst he was there. It might have been Barlinnie, it might have been Greenock, I'm not too sure which prison it was. And he said everyone in that prison knew, even the guards knew, that Abdul El Megrahi did not plant that bomb. And he said he even told him that he was working, giving information for British intelligence. And he said, so there was no backlash against him, because the Scottish system can be quite a brutal system, especially if you're not Scottish. He said no one touched him because they knew that he never planted the bomb. So they can pull the wool over some of the public's eyes, but those that really know, they can't do it. And they know there's a cover up. So, you know, they have done their best, but I have heard a lot about Thomas Hamilton. The only thing I heard about that, and that was from the husband of one of the teachers that was shot, was that he turned up, Hamilton, and his intention was to shoot all the children in assembly. But he asked the kid what the time was, and the kid was late, so the kid lied and said it was a different time to what it was. So by the time Hamilton went in, all the children had dispersed after assembly to their classes, so he had to go from class to class to class. And a lot of the male teachers, actually, when he came in, they ran, and the children then were then left for open fire. But the female teachers instinctively cradled the children, and a lot of them were shot in the back, and they were taking bullets to the children. And this is what happened to my friend's wife. So that's the only thing I know of from a good source of what happened. But yeah, I've heard a lot, and I no doubt that there's probably a lot of truth in it. You know, having known what I've known now, and I knew about with Fred West, that if that wasn't for a woman detective who went and got a warrant that hadn't been authorised by an inspector to search that house, because every time she went to her inspector to get it authorised, he was denying it. So she went and got a warrant, and she said, this man's involved in so many murders. But there was suspicion that he was linked in with a pornographic video club. And they see something like just short of 1,000 pornographic videos from the West, and not one of them was viewed.
And it might be that the local constabulary might have known that and were protecting Fred West by denying the young detective the warrant to go to his house. That's unbelievable, that.
But I mean, on a more of a personal level, the Metropolitan Police, In respect to the investigation, I made allegations against a group of senior officers for corruption. What should have happened in the process of investigating a serious offence like that, because it went to the Serious Corruption Command, was that they're meant to bring in each suspect, right, and they're meant to be cautioned and interviewed. Whether it's done under an arrest scenario or it isn't, either way, they're meant to be interviewed under caution. And I'm meant to be updated as that is happening and post-event.
John, I missed something. Just before you carry on there, I missed something there, because I'm while we're chatting, I'm trying to keep an eye on what people are saying on social media, and I am bunged up with a bloody cold. I think I missed something there. The videos that were found in the West House of Horrors, they were watched, were they? What was on them?
No, they were unwatched.
They were not watched.
What should have happened were they would have been integral evidence to that investigation.
Wow.
Now, you know, you will never know until they're watched. They remained sealed in a bag and were unwatched, and they were sent for destruction.
And Jesus and Christ, John, nobody went through the videos.
No one. And this was on the backdrop of information that they were involved in a pornographic video club. They were killing and torturing young girls. And that, I mean, it just goes against the tradecraft of investigating. And there is no way a senior investigating officer that I'd ever worked with would have allowed that. So where does that level of supervision come from?
Tell me this, John, to your knowledge, has any broadcaster or has any newspaper in this country ever shared the information that the videos recovered from the West House were destroyed? Has that ever been given to the public, that knowledge?
I think it is out there because I got it from sort of an open source, and then I had a contact that sort of had a link in with the main source. So,
wow, John.
Yeah, it goes on all the time. I mean, it happened with myself. The Metropolitan Police failed to investigate it. It went to the IPCC, who did likewise. In the end, the Home Office, they promised me an independent investigation. They seized my paperwork, and then they denied even knowing me. They were caught out when the former policing minister went on to BBC Radio and did say there is a deliberate cover-up around John Wedger and the allegations he's making. So that was a very, very brave and bold statement for a cabinet minister to make, and he still stands by that statement to this day. So it goes right to the heart. I mean, as I've said before, when I was threatened, I was told, you've got no idea how deep this goes.
How deep does it go? Let me just remind our listeners. John Wedger, 25 years, Scotland Yard detective, live on the Richie Allen Show for Tuesday, October 16th. We're coming up for 10 minutes past the hour. John's going to stay with me till around about 6:30, and then both of us are going to depart your company today. It's the Richie Allen Show on Fab Radio 2, Tune In Radio, TriggerWarning.tv, Cogent Radio as well. How far does it go then? Because I like to consider myself as, first of all, as a real journalist, as a presenter. And one of the things I won't ever do is I will never allow anybody make a statement about anybody that can't be proven, because it's libelous and it's dangerous and it's wrong. It's wrong legally. It's morally wrong as well. I've always said, though, that Prince Charles, again, I've never accused him of anything and I never would accuse him of anything, but as he was an affirmed and an avowed best friend of Jimmy Savile, would be a person of interest for a detective like yourself, John. I've also felt that as Prince Andrew had a very close relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, a convicted paedophile, again, regardless of his status or his title, he shouldn't be any different than you or me and should be considered a person of interest. Not to be accused of anything, but to be brought in to say, right, Charles, or right, Andrew, we think this net spreads far and wide. We need to find out some information. Please give us some information. And that's why I ask, how far does it go?
Well, you think he would willingly do it in the interest of justice and decency. And if it helps catch it, anyone that's harming children, you know, the only one that they can't bring is the Queen, because it's her law. It's Her Majesty's courts. So they can't do it. But I mean, it does go right to the heart. I mean, you've got to look at also the overseas territories, right? We get it on the mainland, but you can still move about. But when you get the overseas territories, there's a big inquiry going on at the moment on the Ascension Islands of cover-ups involving child abuse, which go right to the heart of the establishment over there. A similar thing is happening on the Falkland Islands. You know, their police are in disarray at the moment because of allegations. We see that happened in the Channel Islands, and then a little while back, the Pitcairn Islands. You know, but when you're in these little offshore sort of principalities or territories, where do you run? You're stuck there. You can't go anywhere. Belfast, I travelled to Belfast recently and spoke to quite a lot of anti-child abuse campaigners there. And they were saying that there was political connections to the child abuse. and you hear about the Kinkora Children's Home. We're also hearing about the Barnes, the Rocks Lane, the kids' homes there. And one of the other things, and when I was on child abuse investigations, every now and then you would get a religious leader that's been accused of fiddling with a kid, shall we say, just for a term. You couldn't just go and arrest him. You had to have a strategy meeting with all concerned parties. So you'd sit down with social workers, there'd be a representative from that faith, and then a decision would be made whether or not to go and get them. So what you've got then is a massively delayed tactic, and then you're sharing very sensitive information, so it's going to get frustrated. And I know that definitely happened with a case I had when we went and arrested an imam in the East End of London. So, and this is, and it's wrong, it's perverse. Why are they treated any different? You know, if a police officer is accused of stealing, he gets treated so hard, well, overtly harshly in a court. You know, I saw an officer get put away for 18 months in prison. First offence, good lad, everything, no problem. He lost it with a prisoner, highly stressed situation, and he punched a prisoner and he didn't put it in his notes. And he got 18 months. He was dealt with really extremely. So why isn't that the case when we're dealing with people of influence and power and authority, like religious leaders? Why are they not hauled over the coals?
Many years ago, John, my grandfather, it's a story I've told before, was in a hospital called St. Declan's in Waterford, and it's a psychiatric hospital. It's a very nice place, actually. And every now and then, maybe once or twice a year, my granddad would get depressed. He would get very fed up, you know. And he would, sometimes he would go in for a week, and he used to say he was going in for a rest. And he had he had very good health coverage and stuff. And he had a private room. And I remember one day there was an uproar in the hospital when we went to see him, because he wasn't in his private room. He'd been moved into a ward with four other men. Now, my granddad's a very gregarious guy, and he was okay with that. But his coverage that he paid for gave him the private room. So my uncle and aunt kicked off anyway and argued. And eventually he was returned to the private room. And it was a priest in the private room. A priest had been put in there. My granddad had been turfed out, who was later convicted of abusing children, abusing altar boys. And I got to thinking some years later, and you've just touched on it there, I think, I would feel, in the presence of somebody who has sexually abused or raped children, I think I would feel, like most people, I would feel revulsion and I would feel sick. I'm not a hero. You know, I'm not one of those, oh, I'd love to give him a hiding.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't want to touch him, to be honest. I wouldn't want to be anywhere near him. I'd be repulsed by the guy. What you're telling me is, it seems in the authoritative, let's say, offices of society, they seem to be staffed with people that are not repulsed by somebody who abuses a child.
I'm gonna tell you something now. I sat in a meeting with the commissioner, the recent commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, and it was just meant to be me and her discussing what had gone on with me. And when I went in there, she was sat with nine women around her, around a table. And I turned around and I said to her, now, Cressida, I can take a child from the care system. I can groom that child. I can then rape that child. I can then get my friend to rape that child. We can then coerce that child to getting her friends involved, do the same, and then we can make money out of other people having sex with that child, right? And you have not put one person, dedicated one officer, to dealing with that. Yet if I was to lean over my fence and call my neighbour and I said a racially derogatory term, which I'm not going to say now, right? I said, I'm not about that, but I'm just saying for balance. I said, you'd have me ASBO'd. You'd have me arrested straight away. You'd have me before a court. I'll be signing on a register by the end of the day and I'll probably get evicted. How is that balanced? And what happened when I said that word? Someone took a sharp intake of breath. And I said, you know what disgusts me? I've just spoken about having sex with children and not one of you blinked. I've said that word and someone took a sharp intake of breath. I said, oh, it's pointless me even discussing this with you. And this is the mentality. So whenever any you've got these chief constables that go, we're doing it. Actually, by their detail, you know them. One of them has done it, Mike Veal. He stood up. That is a real man. That is a real leader. That man deserves a knighthood. He deserves a Nobel Peace Prize. We should have a campaign. Give Mike Veal a Nobel Peace Prize. That is a leader of men and a protector of children. These others, shame on them. If it is happening, I've just seen Telford. There was a chief constable of that, I think it's Shropshire. And he was saying, we've learnt lessons. We move forward. And I thought, you worm, you maggot of a man. You've done nothing. And the same in London. How have we not had stats about grooming gangs, about child prostitution in London? The most abhorrent crime. Even if a murderer goes to prison, he'll probably get left alone, right? A paedophile goes there, he's a dead man. And do you know how long that's been going on for? They use the term nonce. Now, I'm going to tell you something, Richie. That comes from Pentonville Prison in the old days of penal reform, right? Back in the 1800s, I can't give you the exact date, they knew that paedophiles, child abusers, were going to get hurt. So they had to exercise them separately. And they marked their uniforms not on normal circulatory exercise. Nonce. It's an acronym. And they knew even back then that they were a danger to themselves, to society and everyone else. They were hated back then. So this isn't a recent thing. They've always known it. Yet, they're getting away with it, and they're getting away with it high up. The people need to say enough. We need to do it as a collective. We need to stop these hate campaigns that I suffered, fell foul of, and other campaigners did, when they tried to bring about division and try to divide us. They very nearly did it, but luckily we're a cohesive bunch, we're a tough bunch, and we've got back together. The damage is done, but we've glossed over it and we're moving on. You know, we need to continue along these. Anyone who tries to cause disruptions, we've got to look at them with suspicion, in my opinion. Why is anyone trying to disrupt what we're doing? We are doing probably the most honourable thing that anyone has ever done in society. We're protecting our children. And anyone who gets in the way of that, I would say, look at them with suspicious eyes, because it's wrong.
Look at them with disdain. And I made the point earlier, and I made it in a very long-winded way, but it's the only way I could make it. Everywhere in the chain, and if we want to talk about the pillars of society, legal, obviously legal being very important, judicial, political, it seems that along the way, as you go up the chain, there are buffers, and the buffers come in the shape of men and women, whom, at the very least, are not at all put off by the idea of children being abused. That's the point I was trying to make. It was like when the people responsible for turfing my granddad out of a room and putting a paedophile in there, somebody they knew to be a paedophile, they weren't horrified by him or disgusted by him. Now, I know people have got to be professional in medical facilities and hospitals, I'm well aware of that, but it didn't occur to anybody, well, no, fuck him, you know, he can be in general population, fuck him, it's a psychiatric hospital. And that's what I'm struggling to come to terms with in the last few years, living with people who just are not at all moved by some of the things you've described tonight, horrifying.
Well, let's take you know, the charities. You know, I was told by someone that there's a charity that gets money for donkeys. They have got the maximum amount a charity is allowed to have. They are banned from taking any more money, yet money keeps coming in. They were investigated because they were importing lame donkeys from southern Spain and Morocco to make out that they're still wounded donkeys that need help in the UK. There isn't. We don't use donkeys anymore, apart from on the beaches and things like that. But people were ploughing their money into it. That woman, I've said this before, who threw a cat in a wheelie bin a few years ago, she had to be moved home for her own safety because of the death threats. People were in outrage at it. Yet when someone rapes a child, no one cares. And then when you walk past someone begging outside a shop, a heroin addict, don't give him money, he's going to buy drugs. Well, of course he is. What else is he going to do with it? But let's drag that timeline back. Why is that person on heroin? It's an analgesic. It's a painkiller. They're trying to mask the pain. 90% of them people would have been abused as a child. Let's go back and let's put ourselves in the mindset, in the body of that frightened, scared little child and see how we would carry on with life. Having to go through your day knowing you've had a man's penis shoved in your mouth or wherever else, and no one to turn to. And if you say anything, you're whipped and beaten by those that meant to be caring for you. And I spoke to a guy called James, one of the bravest guys I've ever spoken to, a 72-year-old man that had been abused in the care system, sexually abused, been raped from the age of 6. A lot of it was by women. Again, a misconception that women, they don't do these things. Yes, they do. Someone said to me the other day, well, most paedophiles are white. And I laughed. I said, are you having a laugh? I said, that's nonsense. They come in every single colour. They come in from every single social background. They come from every single religion. They call them trisexual. You know, they'll try anything. And it's just an absolute nonsense. I watched this 72-year-old man reliving the horrors and burst into tears and say, I feel so dirty. And I see the damage decades later, you know, 65 years later, and the pain it's still causing him. And I just think, how dare they have got away with this? And they're still doing it. They are deliberately underfunding police forces. They've lost all the experienced detectives. They've gone. You know, these child abuse investigations are very time consuming. They're very unbelievably talented amount of work you need. 2% success rate on a historic case. You know, the way the children or the vulnerable people are interviewed is the parameters are so unbelievably tight because they will use any little chink defect to throw it out, and they do.
We're going to wrap it up in a couple of minutes. But I think we've covered as much as we should today. We'll pick this up again soon, you and I. Definitely soon, not as long as we left it since the last time we spoke. On the privatisation, I've always believed the service has been destroyed to usher in privatisation. Sitting on my sofa last night when I should have been on the air, but I couldn't speak, and voice is just about to go again, I watched Dispatches on Channel 4, and it was about the murder of witnesses in London, young men who might have given witness statements against criminal gangs in London who've been murdered. And there was an extraordinary thing. In the Dispatches programme, there was a young woman who was presenting the programme. She actually did a FaceTime interview with a scumbag, a murderer, who was in a prison in London. And he was in a cell, and he had an iPhone, and he was doing a FaceTime interview. And she said, how could it be that you were able to do an interview with me? You were known for, you know, witness intimidation and all of that. Now you've got a phone and all that. And then I only had to look... While she was on, I had a bit of a Google about the prison. Of course, the prison is managed by Sodexo. It's managed and run by a private corporation who pays prison guards a fucking pittance, excuse my language, and all hell is breaking out in this prison. That's where we're going, John.
I brought up 4 children on my own. 2 of them weren't my kids. They were going to go into care. And I did there was no way it was going to be any other way. I brought them up. The government gave me sod all. When you see how much some of these foster carers who have gone on to abuse or neglect have made out of looking after kids, how much children's homes have made out of looking after kids, how much the legal system makes. You know, you've got to buy justice. Solicitors charging £400 an hour. I've just helped one guy get his case back before a court, get it judicially reviewed. I did it all for nothing. I've saved him nearly £40,000. I did it all in my own time, all in my own efforts. You know, and I'm the one getting criticised, saying I'm a fraud or whatever, and I'm doing this for him because he can't afford to do it. So we're paying how much money? If I was getting £400 an hour or whatever to look after my 2 older boys, you know, what a different life I would have had. But then again, to bring up a child, all you need is time and love, you know. And when you go on about witnesses that have died, I spoke to one of the barristers on the Marc Dutroux case, Marc Dutroux case in Belgium, right? And when I said to her how many witnesses died in the lead up to the trial there, bear in mind that was a child abuse case which involved, they reckon, probably members of the Belgian royal family, but upper echelons of society. They said 90 civilian witnesses died in the lead up to the trial, and that was in the mid-90s. That's in Belgium, but, you know, we've got to draw parallels. We've got to draw parallels. I mean, they don't need to do that in this country. They've got the Criminal Justice Act of 2000. They just call him a liar, you know, and it's as simple as that. And that's it. Case gone. And this is what we're seeing happen. You know, we're seeing, and it's just wrong. And I just think
90 people, John. Yeah. 90 people.
Yeah.
Murdered.
Yeah. Murdered in Belgium, lead up to the trial of Mark Dutroux. And because this was evidence that could potentially have unhindered the political stability of that country. Now, maybe this is what ICSA is. Maybe the ICSA thing, if that shuts down, what is that doing? That's rinsing people. That is laundering all their information. Well, if it does what it says it's going to do, then God bless it. And let's hope, God willing, justice happens. But if it doesn't, we need to look at why they're doing this, why they're gatekeeping all this.
Absolutely, and why people like you are being accused of being a member of the establishment and all that old bloody nonsense.
Give me strength. I mean, MI5. I mean, it actually is jokeable. I'd just like to say, people, come and see how I live and come and see what I do. I'd welcome an MI5 wage packet. Yeah. I do everything I do for nothing. I travel the length and breadth of the country out of my own money. I help people out of hours. I listen to them. I had one guy ring me the other day, and he was committing suicide whilst doing it, and I had to get the police around to his house. Jesus, you know. And
Is he okay, that guy?
Yeah, he is okay. God bless him. And you know, he's a victim of abuse, and lovely guy and a great fella. But I've not got an agent. I'm not doing TV appearances. I'm not getting a newspaper or anyone else paying me. This is coming out of my own pocket. So I just say to my critics, give me a break.
Well, do you know what? You said at the very outset, we're going to leave it there for today anyway. You said at the very outset, and it was very poignant, the best thing to do is to ignore them and let them get on with it. John, I want to thank you for coming back on. Folks, you've been listening to John Wedger. That's W-E-D-G-E-R. John, you're going to be impressed here now. That's Whiskey Echo Delta Golf Echo Romeo, there you go, Wedger, W-E-D-G-E-R.
Well,
if you go to YouTube and you put John's name in, there's only one John, subscribe, John Wedger, subscribe to his YouTube channel, watch the videos there. I've been watching them today, terrific. And I'm not just when I say this, I'm not patronising you, you're a great interviewer, John, and you'll probably say, that's down to the years I spent as a policeman and all of that, but there's a difference between interviewing people as a policeman and interviewing people as a journalist, and you're excellent, mate. It's really good stuff. I'm really, really impressed with it.
Well, lovely, and thank you. And also, if you look through some of my stuff there, I think there may be a link to the media company that helped me do all my social media with the mobile, and there are courses that they run that are well worth attending. They're phenomenal.
Brilliant, mate. You've got,
and that is the way forward.
That is the way forward. You've got an open door. Let's do this again in the late autumn. Let's get you back on, because I know there are always updates, and I know there's a lady you want to put me in touch with as well to come on the programme, and we'll facilitate that.
Yeah.
In the meantime, on behalf of the voiceless and on behalf of those who have had nobody else to turn to except yourself, like the case you discussed a second ago, sincere thanks, John. Look after yourself, mate. Godspeed to you, and I'm glad that you're out there. I really am.
Yeah, God bless. Thank you, Richie. And I'll say to everyone, just don't give up. Let's stick together. Let's not let them divide us. And let's get some justice for once.
Thanks very
much.
Just
have a result. God bless. Thank you, Richie.
You're welcome, mate. Anytime. The lovely John Wedger, 25 years Scotland Yard detective, live on The Richie Allen Show. When this goes out on podcast and on YouTube, share it with people. Get it out to people. Particularly those who might be a bit indifferent to it, or who might be a bit reticent to engage with such information. You've got a quarter of a century experience there investigating this stuff, and some of the things he told me he should be telling the national media, but of course they don't want to hear from him or anybody like him. My voice is about to go. I should be on till 7, but I'm going. I can't talk anymore. I've not been well for the last few days. So I'm going to go. I will be back with you tomorrow at 5, no matter what. Until then, thanks to John Wedger. Thanks to you for listening. Going to leave you with some music from Blues Traveller. And I'll see you tomorrow. All right, bye for now. Bye now. Bye.